This week on the eBay for Business podcast.
Cherry Peak is a powerful tool because it also is able to tell you sell-through rate. It's also able to tell you what is the average price, how much do people charge for shipping. Yep. And so you can make your determination in the thrift store as to whether that's an item you want to pick up.
But the biggest, most exciting thing that I saw was community and everyone coming together to support each other.
I'm Alan.
And I'm Liz, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly source for the information and inspiration you need to start, run, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace.
And this is episode number 75, and that is my good friend Liz I hear. Welcome back to the show. How I've missed that Australian accent.
G'day, mate.
G'day, mate.
That accent has come back thick and very thick since being back in the land. But thank you. I'm very happy to be here and coasting with you today, Alan. And I'm sending my very best wishes to Griff for his recovery. We'll see him back here on the show soon. And I was speaking to him yesterday, yeah, and he did say that white lilies were his favorite flowers if anyone wanted to send him some flowers. So I promised that I would put it out there.
Nice.
And hopefully someone may deliver some flowers to him.
Exactly, exactly. You got to keep Griff happy. Well, we've got another jam-packed show. This week, eBay sellers Mike and Orlando share their advice on how to successfully source inventory.
Then we'll discuss a topic that is near and dear to my heart, and that is the devastating Australian bushfires. And we'll share ways sellers can help to support the fight and the current recovery efforts.
And then we'll wrap up the show with some seller Q&A. So will we do this thing?
Let's do it.
Coming up next is the main story. Many of our listeners who sell on eBay source their products by arbitrage. That is, they purchase from other retail outlets and resell the products on eBay. Now, this can be a workable way of running a business on eBay, but it's not always as easy as just walking into a Big Lots or a thrift store and indiscriminately purchasing inventory. Especially when it comes to thrifting, purchasing inventory to resell from thrift stores or estate sales, it takes finesse, laser focus, discipline, and also copious research in order to avoid ending up with products or items for which there is no real viable market. Today on the podcast, we are fortunate to be rejoined by two thrifting experts who have agreed to share their wisdom with us so we can all better avoid ending up with that stuff that won't sell. Mike and Orlando are known on eBay under the IDs Lando's Loot and Swift Media, and they also have their own podcast under the name of Pure Hustle Podcast. Welcome back to the podcast, Mike and Orlando.
Hey, how's it going, Alan?
How are you doing? Thank you so much for having us back on. We're excited.
Thank you, guys. We're very excited to chat with you again. But let's get to know you a little bit more first. How long have you been selling on eBay, Mike and Orlando?
This is Mike, and I've been selling only about a little over a year and a half. It's relatively new for me. In fact, when we started the podcast, I was an absolute newbie. I didn't know anything, and we started it with the premise of Orlando, who is a little bit more experienced as a reseller, was like, hey, I could teach you how to do this. So one of the very first times is he just got me in the car with him. We went to a couple garage sales. I picked up some stuff and I was like, you know what? I think I can do this. And so he's been teaching me how to do it, and I've been reselling for about a year and a half, a little bit more than that now.
Yeah. Nice. And Orlando, how long have you been doing it?
So I've been reselling for 10 plus years.
Right.
I got serious about it 5 years ago, part-time, and this is my second year full-time reselling on eBay and other platforms. One thing I did want to address real quick, though, we use the term expert, and I don't think there are such things as experts. I think there's experienced, and I think there's maybe veteran, because expert, you know, that's a tough one, because the market's always changing, right? But yes, you can definitely learn a niche really well.
Exactly. And eBay policy change, marketplace policies change. So you might be an expert one day, but you got to keep up to speed with all of the latest and greatest things that are happening. So yeah, you're right. And Mike, what type of merchandise do you sell on eBay?
Oh man, that's always a fun one to answer, because the reality is it's like a little bit of everything. When I very first started selling, I picked up some books. I picked up a decoy duck. I picked up some VCRs. And since then, I mean, I'm sitting in a room right now with a bunch of my inventory, and it really is just a little bit of everything. I've got everything from hard goods to stuffed animals to toys, board games, lots of clothes, shoes. I mean, that's one of the nice things about selling this way is you start to learn a lot of different markets and can really get into a lot of different niches.
Nice. What about you, Orlando?
I'm not a little bit of everything. I think I started off that way, and then I really began to hone in certain areas that I knew. So I'm very big on vintage apparel. And when I mean vintage, I mean just like 20 years ago, like the stuff I loved when I was younger.
Yeah.
The stuff I couldn't get when I was in high school.
Yeah.
You know, right now that market is very hot. 90s, 80s, it's doing really well. And so that's been pretty much what I've been pushing as far as eBay goes the last, I would say, last 6 months. Mm-hmm. And it's been very profitable. It's been great, whether it's from shoes, whether it's been to jackets or jeans. I mean, you know, sky's the limit because there's so much during that era that right now is pretty popular.
Yeah, and I think it's only going to increase. I saw a lot of media articles recently about the environmental impact of always purchasing new clothes, always yes. buying new clothes. And there seems to be a big focus now with climate change of actually buying pre-owned clothes and buying vintage clothes. So I think the category on eBay is going to get a lot stronger because we're going to have more buyers coming in, being more environmentally aware and wanting to not always go down to the store and buy things, but actually getting those things from the 90s that they couldn't get when they were a kid. So going onto eBay and doing it and looking super fashionable while they're doing it. So I'm excited for fashion on eBay in 2020. I know myself, I've made a pledge not to buy new clothes and to buy more pre-owned things on eBay and from vintage stores. And I'm excited to try it out and see how it goes.
Yeah, no, it really is a great time for resellers. I mean, yeah. When you walk into a thrift store and you're finding, I mean, you hear old phrases where people say like one man's trash is another man's treasure. Well, it really is that way. And especially now, like you said, with so many people who are wanting to recycle and wanting to reuse and not make a big impact on the environment by buying new things. And the great thing is it's actually cool right now. And we're looking at a lot of like younger generation, younger people who are coming up and now they have money to spend and they want to spend it on used stuff and they want to spend it on really cool, neat, unique used stuff. So for those of us who are eBay sellers, it's like a golden era, I feel like.
Well, no, I agree. And just to add to that, sustainability is one of the major trends, I believe, in 2020. Mm-hmm. If you look on, you know, Instagram or TikTok or any of the social media platforms that are being used, like it's an ongoing theme. It's cool to go to the thrift store, not just to resell, but just to buy. And so, you know, it's also going to get a little bit more competitive, but you know, you find those right items that people are looking for. There you have it.
Yep. And speaking of being competitive, there, yeah, if you do a search for clothes on eBay, I think there's millions and millions of listings. So the key is obviously sourcing things that people want to buy. You can go and you can source tons of clothes, but there's no guarantee they'll sell. So Orlando, how do you know what to buy when you're out thrifting?
I would say that, you know, I was thinking this question over because I knew this question would come up at some point because we always get asked, you know, how do you know, right? Yeah. How do you know? And if you're new, you know, one of the things that Mike did very early on, actually, Mike, why don't you share, what did you do early on when you were trying to figure out what to get before you walked into the store?
I mean, there was two things. One is I would just use eBay as a tool, right? So I would go online and I would look up, you know, if I'm going to try and buy some shoes, right? Some used shoes. I would look up a specific style, maybe sneakers, maybe men's dress shoes. And then I would just sort in the last 60 days what's sold on eBay and kind of try and figure out, you know, what are the big brands? What am I seeing? And I wouldn't do the items that sold for several thousand, right? Because I figured those were unicorns. But I would look for what are the items selling for a couple hundred to $100. Mm-hmm. And as I got to get more familiar with brands, that helped out a lot for sure.
Yeah. And so then Mike would start going to the thrift stores and I remember one time he contacted me and he's like, I believe they were Red Wing boots.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's like, hey, I did the research and the boots that I found on the solds, on the comps on eBay are the boots that are right here. And so he already did the research right off the bat before he already showed up. So that's very helpful. Nice. The other one is when you're beginning, and even now I still do it, is you have so many tools. Not only do you have eBay sold from the last 90 days, you also, if you have an eBay store subscription, you have Terapeak. And we've talked about Terapeak, actually, I think the last time we were on eBay for Business, but Terapeak is a powerful tool because it also is able to tell you sell-through rate. It's also able to tell you what is the average price, how much do people charge for shipping. Yep. And so you can make your determination in the thrift store as to whether that's an item you want to pick up.
That's awesome. Some great tips. I like Terapeak myself. I've been using it for years and invaluable to stay on top of trends and to help you identify what to buy and what not to buy.
One thing lately I've noticed and I've talked about earlier is about buying things that I wanted when I was at this age, you know, when I was in high school and college, and I'm in my 40s now, but I'm still relatable a little bit. I would say, you know, right now that market, since it's booming, you got to think about what were things that you had wanted. You may not, at the moment, you may feel overwhelmed when you walk into a store, mm-hmm. right? Because you're like, do I really have to search every single item? Actually, you should, but if you're slow on time, think back and go, okay, look through the racks and go, all right, what are some items that I had, you know, wanted back in the day? Or what are some items that I see now in magazines that are trending or on Instagram or whatever social media? Because that'll give you a better eye as to what you're looking for. So that's not the most, you know, I would say best way to do it, but it's definitely, you know, a way that you can kind of sift through stuff faster.
Okay. Thank you, Orlando. So there is a saying that goes something like, a reseller learns more from his mistakes than from his successes. Does that resonate? Yeah, you understand?
100%.
So can you recall what your most memorable or embarrassing, if you will, inventory purchase was?
Man, you know, it's hard because I've had a lot where I've been totally duped. And you're right, I do learn from it. I mean, I purchased just not too long ago, a few weeks ago, a Super Nintendo, or actually just a Nintendo old school NES original. And it wasn't working and I paid way too much for it. And I actually had to learn to fix it so that I could kind of, you know, recomp some of that cost that I put for that inventory. But it was a learning experience. One, I learned more how it works, how to check if something is working and really what the price value is. But I'd say the one that's the most memorable of like, man, this was a bad buy was I went into a thrift store and I was looking at boots and different shoes. And I found a pair of boots that at first they looked okay and they were priced okay and they had good comps, but the sole on one of them is just totally fallen off. It looks terrible. And I remember thinking to myself, like, who would buy this? Like, even if you like this was the shoe you're looking for, like it is just falling apart. And a couple of weeks later, I go into the thrift store and I'm kind of rushed for time and I'm looking at stuff. I end up picking up those boots and I totally forgot that those were the ones that I had already looked at and said, who would buy this? And then I ended up being the person who bought it, right? Then at that point, there's nothing I could do with it. I couldn't sell it. I couldn't take it back. It was just a reminder that sometimes you do have to slow down. You're in a hurry, especially when we're doing garage sales. We do a lot of garage sales and time is really, really crucial. But sometimes it's worth that moment to slow down a little bit, examine an item before you pick it up, because there's nothing worse than getting that item home thinking, man, here's an easy $100 profit, just to realize, actually, I just lost $20 that I'll never get back.
Ah. Yeah, I've made a terrible mistake. I hate that sinking feeling when you check and you're like, oh, damn. what did I do? How am I going to explain exactly this one? And Orlando, yep, your turn. What was your most costly inventory sourcing mistake and any insights or learnings from that?
I think it was costly over time. I can't distinctly remember anything that I put a lot of money on and I just lost my money on it, because that's the beauty of eBay. You can always part things out. You can always sell things for parts.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can do various things to make sure your stuff still sells. But I will say I lost a lot of money over time in the first, I would say, 2 years where I got serious about reselling, because I wasn't researching like I should have. I was picking up whatever I thought looked cool. So, you know, here's some examples, some shirts. I picked up a shirt that had a surfer guy surfing in Hawaii. Well, you can pick that up at any tourist shop, right? Like, why did I pick that up? Or when Will Ferrell did the cowbell thing, remember the cowbell skit? Like, yeah. I thought that shirt was hilarious. So I picked up like four or five of those, you know? I picked a Sesame Street Run DMC shirt. Like, I picked up all these shirts that I thought were cool.
Yeah.
But they never sold. And I still have some of that stuff in my inventory. And it's always a celebration when it sells. And I always use it on Instagram as a teaching tool to go, this took 7 years.
Wow.
It was listed this long amount of time. I lost this much insertion fees. Still, you know, either I made, you know, I might make like 20 cents and I'll celebrate the 20 cents. But you can lose a lot of money if you go to thrift stores and you just go on, I think this is cool. Like, to me, that is just not conventional at all.
Yeah.
One of the beauties of doing this kind of selling when you're doing thrift stores and garage sales, and we do other types, you know, retail arbitrage as well at times. But one of the beauties of thrift stores and garage sales is usually the stakes are much smaller. So you have less invested when you're making mistakes, and you do need to make those mistakes and learn from them. And when it does hurt, you learn better, right? But the reality is, if you're buying an item for $5, you get it home, you do a little bit more research and you realize, this wasn't what I thought it was. It's a little different than if you go really deep in something and you're spending thousands of dollars and then you fail there. Beauty is you kind of get to learn slowly, grow slowly, and the whole time you're developing that knowledge and your understanding of different niches, and then you start to become more and more profitable and those mistakes become less frequent.
And you're paying for your education with those bad buys.
That's right.
Right? That's what, we don't call it a loss. We still call it a win, because in the end, you're still learning. It might have cost you $5 or $10, but hey, you learned something.
Yeah, you won't make that mistake again the next time, hopefully. So Orlando, before you walk into a store to purchase merchandise to resell on eBay, do you have a mental checklist that you go through first? If so, what's on that checklist? And to give more detail, I mean like a list that says, I will not buy X today, but I will search for Y. Or do you just go in freestyle and just start hunting for whatever you can find?
No, that is a great question. I sell hard goods and I sell electronics. The problem with those is I don't like the work that goes into those items when I pick them up from the thrift store, right? Because you got to test them, you got to clean them. And so it depends. On some weeks when I have a huge amount of electronics that I haven't sorted through, I'm not even look at it. because I know what will happen. I'll look at something. I'm like, hey, I can make this amount of money, and I'll pick it up and I'll just put it on the stack of other items that I didn't prep and get ready to put on eBay. The ones I always constantly go to. So shoes are big for me. Shoes are, to me, it's at a place where, you know, in the store, I find a lot of people go for the clothing. A lot of people like looking for video games and stuff, but shoes are one that there's so much variety and there's so much basically money in shoes that not a lot of people miss. Because, for example, if you go to like hiking shoes, people don't care if they're scuffed or if they're dirty or, you know, because they're using them for hiking. But I find that they get looked over. Now, after this podcast, a lot more people will probably look for those. But
good job, Orlando.
Oh, secrets out.
Oh, no. Hey, listen, we've been in this game for a while. You have to actually get out there. So I'm not worried about that. I do shoes right away because I find they have the biggest return on investment. I find shoes that I, you know, I pick up for $5 and I can sell for $80. Then after that, I go to clothing. And clothing, I can, you know, I can sift through clothing really fast. And then I go to hard goods.
Okay.
So it all depends. You know, that's kind of the way I do it. Now, it depends. If I have too much clothing inventory and too many shoes, I'll go to hard goods first and I'll be more selective on what I pick up. So it all depends on the amount of inventory I have listed at the moment.
Gotcha. Thank you. For a second, let's close our eyes and let's imagine we're in a thrift store. You find something interesting on the shelf. You pick it up and you look it over. Mike, tell me, what's the first thing you consider when determining if the item is worthy for purchase for resale?
Oh, that's a great question. So one of the big things when it comes to that, I think it kind of depends on where you're at in your reselling career. So if you're first starting out, I kind of had a threshold. If I could make, I wasn't even so much concerned about return on investment, which is now a bigger factor for me. But when I first started out, I was like, if I can make $20 on an item, it's a clear pick. You know, I'm gonna get this item. I'm going to buy it because if it sells for $20, especially if it's going to sell quickly. Then as my inventory started to fill up and my wife let me have a tote in the garage, that tote ended up turning into a rack and that rack turned into the whole garage. Now we have a storage unit, right?
Nice.
But space was limited at first. And so then it started to become, okay, well, $20 is good if it can sell in the next month or two. But if this might be a couple of years, maybe $20 isn't worth it. I don't want to tie this money up if that's all I'm making. So then it became, okay, if I can make $30, $40, $50. So I think that for me, the biggest factor is two things. One is how quick is it going to sell? And two, how much profit am I going to make on it? And return on investment is really big to consider too, because a lot of people think I might be able to make $20 on this, but if it costs me $50, well, that return isn't very great because you're tying up capital that you could be spending on other items. Whereas if I could pick up an item for $5 and net $20 profit, that's still a win for me if it's going to sell in the next 6 months.
Yeah, nice. Great advice. Orlando, same question to you.
So it's so interesting what Mike said, because I think the same way too. Like, it has to be a certain amount, has to sell at a certain rate. But for me, it all depends. So I have a helper too. So it's not just me that lists items. And so sometimes my helper, you know, she's in college and so she's not available. When she's not available, I won't pick up lower priced items because I look at time. How much time is it going to cost me to list an item, right? Because the same amount of time might take you to list a $10 item, could be a $100 item, could be a $1,000 item. When it's just me listing on my own, I usually try to look for $40 gross profit. And if something, you know, I'm willing to let things sit for a long time, but I'm okay with that because I find that usually, you know, when you buy something, you make, and some people disagree, but you make your money when you buy it. As long as you do the research, most of the time there's a buyer out there for that item, but it depends how flooded the market is. If it's my helper is around, I'm willing to make $15 to $20 net profit just because I understand that I'm paying her a certain amount and she could crank out a certain amount of listings that amount of time. Mm-hmm. It's worth my time because I'm doubling my time and I'm making more profit. The other factor too is, like Mike said, if it's something that can sell fast, also if it can ship really easily, I'll buy lower priced items because it doesn't cost me much. It'll take me maybe 5 minutes to list and maybe 5 minutes to pack. And if I'm going to make $10, $15 in that amount of time, that's pretty good. So I'm okay with it.
Yeah, there's nothing sweeter than sourcing something that you can just pop into an envelope and ship it out and you don't have to cover it in bubble wrap or put those packing peanuts into a box and tape it all up. If you can just get something small that goes out quickly, that's really the best thing. Yeah, but those are hard to find, right?
Otherwise,
everybody be doing it. And Orlando, you mentioned you have a helper. So at what stage of your eBay journey or reselling journey did you figure that you needed to get some help?
So it was about 6 months in going full time. Actually, no, it was actually like 4 months in going into full time. And the reason it was because I recognized if I wanted to build, I just couldn't do it on my own. And everybody has their own pace and speed. I know some resellers that have been on their own and they can make $1 million on eBay through thrift goods. I know I couldn't. And so you got to find the model that works for you. And what I found was that clothing really slowed me down. I loved finding the clothing, but I was not a fan of measurements and pictures.
Yes.
I found it that it was easy for me to source and I could drop them off to her and she could take the pictures and through MUA, the multi-user access account that we have on eBay
very
now.
Very good. Very good.
It's been great. I love it. That was one of the best things that happened to eBay, I would say, in the last few years.
Good to hear.
She gets everything ready for me and all I have to do is, you know, go through the draft, tweak a few things and I'm ready to go. So the stress is not there for me.
So she helps you doing the tasks that you do not enjoy, right?
Correct.
So you'd figured that out. Yeah, if you can clear the stuff off your plate that you don't like and you can focus on the things you like doing research and going out and sourcing inventory, then surely that just makes you a much more powerful reseller that can grow their business much quicker than buying clothes and then have to worry about measuring them and photographing them. You know, myself, that's not something I enjoy. So I love the idea of getting somebody in to help if you can manage. That's yes. that's a really great tip. So I noticed you both maintain separate selling IDs on eBay. So tell me, are you in competition with each other?
Oh, controversy here. I'm going to let Mike explain this
one. Yeah, okay. So it started off and we really weren't competition because one of the things when I was first learning and I learned a lot from Orlando was he was teaching me things. So I had no problem going to a garage sale, going to a thrift store and he would show me something and he was very kind. He would like show me a pair of shoes or VCRs and say like, "Hey, you can make $40 on this. You should get it, Mike." And I would be like, no, you found it. You told me about it. I didn't know. I'm going to accept this lesson. But as time went, and I was very naive when I first started, and it actually worked to my benefit because I scanned everything. Like I would look up a trinket and I would be like, maybe this is worth money. Things that now I would never scan. But the benefit of that is I was finding stuff Orlando would never look at. So in a lot of ways, we weren't competition because I was looking at totally different stuff. I was looking at things that he was just not even in his mindset to pick up. And I was still finding money. But then as time went, and we started to kind of have some similar niches. There's been many, many times we've been out garage selling separately. We go separately. We don't plan our routes out together.
Or thrift stores.
Yeah, or thrift stores. But multiple times I'm at a garage sale and next thing you know, he walks up and he's like, "Hey, Mike." Or the other way, I walk up on him. And one time we were at a garage sale and I'm like looking at some old G.I. Joes still in their packaging. They were really cool.
Yeah.
And I'm like trying to do some research and he walks up. He's like, "Hey, look who I found." He was doing an Insta story. And then he walks to the box next to me and he finds some like pennants from this guy. And he's like, "Oh, I'll buy this whole box." And he made a killing off of him. And I'm like, I didn't even get a chance to look at that box yet. So there are times when I'm not happy to see Orlando out in the field. For sure.
And we have gone to thrift stores together. Yep, I mean, it's happened. It's interesting because every time we go, I don't know if because we feel pressure. Like, we don't find things when we're working together. I think it's the social aspect distracts us.
That's true.
Yeah,
I think when we go on our own, we're not distracted.
Yeah.
And we're able to do the research. I really believe that.
Yeah, you can get into the zone when you're on your own. And then when you go back in the evening, you can hang out and you can do your podcast and you can chat about all of the things you've learned and makes it a lot easier, I guess. What are some of the more common sourcing or thrifting mistakes you see made by eBay sellers when they're looking for products in the same types of venues in which you shop?
Yeah, that's a good question. One of the things that I've noticed is we love social media. We think that social media has such a great impact on the reselling world. But one of the problems is people can get sucked into looking for one specific thing. Like, it can become really trendy to look for mugs, for instance, or it can become really trendy to look for one specific brand. And people become almost too laser focused. They're looking for one thing. They're looking for one brand. I remember when I first started selling, Orlando told me that Rain Spooner shirts were worth a lot of money. And so I would look through racks and I was just trying to find Rain Spooner shirts and I wouldn't find any. And so I'd leave the rack. But what I was doing is I was leaving a lot of money on the table because I wasn't spending the time to research other brands. Now, there was, like I said, I was naive and I scanned a lot of stuff that I probably shouldn't have, but certain areas I was too laser focused. And so I would say the number one mistake I see a lot of people do is they have one niche or one thing and they don't move when the market changes. Yes, a certain type of plush might be really, really popular right now because, hey, Lion King just came out. Lion King plushes are doing well. But if people are only looking for that and they're not recognizing that this trend is dying out and I need to kind of learn another niche. I need to learn a new area of expertise that I might not have any experience in.
Orlando, anything
so
to add?
On my end, so this was something I didn't pick up until I would say probably 2 years ago when I went full time, is a lot of people don't look to the sold and unsold ratio, right? The sell through. They may see something in a thrift store and they'll look up comps and it's sold once. Yes. I can make money on this, right?
Okay.
But you click that unsold and there's like 30 of them. Either one, you're going to have to be the bottom price on there, right? Which may cause you to lose money. You're not going to make as much profit, or you're going to be waiting a long time. I mean, it'll sell sometime, just don't know when. And so that was something that by observing other resellers doing it, I decided to start doing that. And I noticed that my numbers began to change because I used to pick up anything. If it sold once on the comps, I'm like, it's good to go. Terapeak's a great tool. I keep going back to Terapeak, but Terapeak shows you stuff 365 and it shows you sell-through rate, right? And so you're able to understand, okay, is this something that just sold in the last 90 days once because just one buyer decided they want it? Or is this something that over seasons, maybe it's sold through a lot in the fall and in the summer, it's not doing so well. So I definitely want to encourage those that are going to thrift stores that are new, or maybe you've been reselling for a while. If you haven't checked the sold to the unsold, that's definitely something you need to take a look at, you know, so you're not losing time and money on an item that may forever be sitting in your inventory.
Before we go, could you tell us a little bit about your own podcast?
Like Mike said, it was Mike, you know, was new reselling and I had been reselling for a while. And here's the thing about reselling, like you can really pick up quick how to resell. I think you can definitely build. It still takes time. You still have to, you know, you develop an eye for things and niches. But Mike, he knows his board games and he knows, you know, Doug Decoys and he knows a bunch of other things. But, you know, our podcast, we're very much, we like to document our process.
Right.
And I'll let Mike build on this, but, you know, we're not trying to sell a course, or we're not trying to tell you exactly how things are. We kind of want to teach through our experiences, the good and the bad. Our slogan is being real and being relevant and being reselling. And so that's what, you know, if a listener wants to catch our podcast, mm-hmm. that's what they'll hear whenever they tune in. You want to build on that,
yeah,
Mike?
Yeah, that's right. And our podcasts are very long form. So they go anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half. Twice a week, we have interviews of great resellers. And a lot of the times we're just talking about what's going on, current events, kind of new things that are happening with eBay or in the reselling world. And then we talk about like, what's the hustle of the week? Like, what's something great that happened with us? And our listeners send in hustles of the week.
Nice.
And then we have BOLOs, things that we're seeing at thrift stores or garage sales. Like, hey, you guys should be picking this stuff up. And it really is amazing how fast even the podcast has changed my life. So I went from, I'm a full-time teacher and my wife had a full-time job at a corporation. Yeah. And as we started reselling and we learned how well we could do this, my wife now stays home full time and she does reselling with me, and it has completely changed. And so watching even my progression on this podcast over the last year and a half, and if you listen to my our earlier stuff, it's like, you know, episode one, it was a little rough and I didn't know anything, and we've progressed and we've changed. And so I would say if anybody is interested in listening to just a couple of guys and a whole bunch of other listeners who like to be involved and send stuff in about our experiences, what's going on, what we're seeing, the ups and downs of reselling, it's a lot of fun. And I really enjoyed doing the podcast.
So it's the Pure Hustle Podcast. Where can sellers go to find your show?
So you can find us on iTunes, on Spotify. You just search Pure Hustle Podcast. We're on there. We're also on YouTube, Pure Hustle Podcast, if you want to see our bearded mugs.
Yeah.
We're there. And we're also on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok.
Wow.
We are Pure Hustle
Podcast.
You
are everywhere.
And we're also on Facebook. So we have our loyal listeners on Facebook too, Pure Hustle Podcast. So yeah, we are. And our depending on the platform, we switch up, you know, kind of how we share information. So you'll see some interesting things on TikTok that you may not see on Instagram.
That's right.
Oh, okay. I'll have to download TikTok. I've been putting it off, but I think you've convinced me now. I want to see that exclusive Pure Hustle Podcast TikTok content.
That's right.
There you go.
Well, guys, listen, I want to thank you both for taking the time to talk with us today. We really appreciate it. And I know that's going to go over really well with our sellers.
Oh, thank you so much, yeah, Alan. We really appreciate it.
It's meant a lot. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Mike and Orlando are experienced resellers on eBay, and they sell under the user IDs Lando's Loot and Swift Media. And you can catch their podcast at Pure Hustle Podcast. Hi, it's Alan Aisbett here again, and I'm here with Liz Austin today, who's just returned from Australia. We're getting a lot of questions from sellers about how they can help support the bushfires that are ravaging the country. So to hear firsthand about the experience, we've invited Liz into the studio as soon as she touched the ground. Welcome back, Liz. It's nice to see you safe and sound. Tell us about your experience over there.
Thanks, Alan. As you all know or can hear, I am Australian, born and bred, and I returned to Australia over the holidays, so December, to see my family. And what started as a family welcome, rah-rah, let's get excited, turned into actually quite a frightening experience. Little by little, we were seeing the news that our country was on fire. And it was state after state. What started as a little small fire in Queensland then moved to these horrible fires in Sydney that have been going for, I think, 7 weeks now.
Wow.
Then Victoria and now even Tasmania. And I believe there's some fires in Perth now as well. And it's because it's so dry there. Like, we are in drought. The temperatures are getting warmer. The country is getting drier. And so what would be a little bushfire, firstly, turns into these big, horrendous, out-of-control fires that we just can't tackle. And it's pretty frightening. It's super sad. And it was just on the news everywhere. You know, we would talk about it all the time. It would be on the news, all-consuming. And my kids started talking about it, which then got me thinking, you know, we should probably just listen to the news once a day. But they were talking about the koalas that were dying, and because one-third of the koala population is either dead or endangered. And then they started having nightmares about the fires. And then I thought, enough.
No more.
No
news.
More.
Yeah.
We need to take a break from this.
Yeah, I read somewhere that over 1 billion animals had been killed. And that was a conservative estimate. They couldn't account for sea animals and things like that. But at least 1 billion animals on land were killed. Never heard of anything of that scale in my life. And it's so shocking to think of the animals and the wildlife and things that have been destroyed or species that have been pushed into extinction because of the fires.
Absolutely. Yeah. In terms of human numbers, you know, it's 24. It's not as high as we've seen in the past, but it's the animal numbers that are just blowing everyone's minds. And it's actually split the nation. So there's, you know, there's believers in climate change and non-believers. But the biggest, most exciting thing that I saw was community and everyone coming together to support each other. And we all have a love-hate relationship with social media, but it turned out to be the most powerful vehicle for raising much-needed funds.
Nice. Good there.
Getting the word out there. And, you know, we saw Brad Pitt donating money, like everyone, all the superstars were donating money. All the big brands were donating money. I left the country on the weekend feeling comforted by the community camaraderie and the fact that whatever is thrown at us, if we come together and help each other out, we're going to be okay.
And what examples, you talked about seeing people come together, a community on social media. Do you have any examples of some amazing things you've seen? Was it Facebook, Twitter, Instagram? Where were people, or was it everywhere? Where were they coming together?
Everywhere, but I'm an Instagram follower. I saw it there a lot. Some of the big influencers that have, you know, 24 million followers globally were able to tell people where to donate money. So I think when these things happen, people don't really know how to help.
No.
We all know deep down that we want to help, but we don't really know how. So social media was a great vehicle to tell people how to help and what charities actually were the right charities to donate money to. There was an issue in Australia last time this happened, not as big, but the money wasn't necessarily allocated to the right charities. So this time we were all acutely aware to donate to the fire brigades, to the wildlife agencies and to food banks. So really helping provide food to those people that had no homes.
Yeah, it's really such a shocking event that, you know, unless if you look at a world map, I don't think you really think about how large the continent of Australia is. It's so huge. So when you look at the scale of the devastation across the whole country, really is eye-opening in terms of what the people on the ground must be going through. It must be so hard to kind of deal with it. So to get a break from that, to get away from the flames and the smoke, the toxic fumes is really, really difficult. And I saw videos from people in New Zealand. I've got some friends living in New Zealand and they were posting videos from their house and there was thick smoke coming over from Australia. So even if you're in a different country, right, it's affecting people. So really, really shocking pictures. But I was keeping an eye on social media and, as you said, really impressed by how the community truly rallied together. I lived in Australia a decade ago for a year or so, and I traveled around and worked on some farms for a few months, and I was able to see the names and places that I stayed up in flames, and that really hit home to me. Usually when you see events on the news in another country, it's hard to get some kind of perspective on that or put yourself in the shoes of the people on the ground. But, you know, I found that for me, that was really impactful. So just really sad all around. And I think it is such a global event. And now you just see so much talk about the climate crisis. It's only going to amplify that conversation and bring it more top of mind. So hopefully more can be done to prevent and leaders will move faster to introduce legislations and laws to help protect the environment and the planet.
What I struggled with when I left on the weekend was I felt I was abandoning the country, which pretty bad feeling.
Yeah.
But, you know, I couldn't fight the fires. I had donated a lot of our money and I had tried to drop off food supplies, but they were turning them away because they couldn't actually get them out to the fires. So I committed to coming back to America and helping channel people's need to help or want to help in the right areas. So that's what I wanted to do here today.
Brilliant.
Was to explain to sellers how they can help if they want to.
Nice.
Obviously, no one needs to. But if you want to, there's some ways that eBay's put together that can help people who want to help.
Yeah, yeah. So I've seen a lot of sellers on the eBay forums and on social media asking how they can help through eBay, because eBay is well known for our charity aspect. So if you can tell us some ways that sellers can get involved, that would be brilliant.
All right. Well, here is the scoop. You can obviously purchase gifts that give back. So US-based shoppers can visit the charity shop. So just Google search eBay charity shop and buy gifts that give back. And it's a direct charitable donation from one of the US-based international charities helping with the disaster relief. And these symbolic donations range in value from $5 to $100 and been set up in partnership with Direct Relief, American Red Cross, Global Giving and Salvation Army. So you can be confident that the money is going into the hands of those that need it.
Yeah.
You can also give at checkout. So when you're buying something, and we know that our sellers do buy on eBay as well, buyers can select one of the charities as their favorite charity and give a donation at checkout every time you buy. So when you're shopping on eBay, you can choose to shop for items that directly benefit one of your favorite charities or add a donation from $1 up to $25 at the time that you check out. And then finally, sellers, when you're doing what you do really, really well, which is selling, you can donate a portion of your sales to the charities as well. So you can select charities your favorite charity and donate a portion of your sales to the charity's fundraising efforts. And any eBay seller can choose to donate a percentage between 10 to 100% of your sale to your favorite charity on the eBay platform. And then eBay credits the insertion and final value fees equal to the percentage of the donation. So it's a bit of a win-win situation there.
Nice. Great to hear.
eBay itself has donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to the Australian Red Cross. And we also, as employees, are being encouraged to donate. There's an amazing story of an eBay Australian employee, Yin, who spent days fighting the fires as a volunteer.
Nice.
Yeah, how good is that?
Good on him. That's fantastic.
And any donations that eBay employees make is also matched by eBay. So that's awesome as well. So that is the ways that you can help if you're up for it. Otherwise, you know, I'm sure everyone's seen, again, on social media other ways, but we just wanted to be clear about ways that our sellers could help through eBay.
Well, Liz, thanks for stopping by and talking about this topic. I know it's quite a somber one. It's not the usual fun and lighthearted topic we talk about on the podcast sometimes, but it is important to recognize the struggles that are going on in Australia. We do have a lot of buyers and sellers located in Australia, and obviously we send our thoughts out to them and we encourage sellers from around the globe to get involved and to send anything they can, be it financial or whatever way they can support to the efforts in Australia. So there was a couple of links mentioned in the in this conversation. We'll put them in the transcript.
Great.
So people can click through and look at different ways to support. So Liz, thanks again. We appreciate you taking the time to stop by and co-host and talk to us about this important topic. Up next is Seller Q&A. It's time to answer some of the questions we received into our phone line and emails this week. Our phone number is 888-723-4630. And our email address is podcast@ebay.com if you do want to get in contact with us. Liz, are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, let's listen to our first caller.
Hello, this is seller Easter Bassett, all one word. And my question is, I would like to see the programmers or builders of the software that we use as sellers to help improve all buyers' experience with currently they can sort by price and shipping cost, either from high to low, low to high. I had a buyer have an experience. They were not that happy with the experience because they were surprised that the sales tax added at checkout and they felt that they had the price altered on them. Is there anything in progress to upfront before they bid on an auction to be aware of that? Like, is there a way to add something to be into the sort thing so they can see it by price? We all are having a hard time with this, some of us are having a hard time with keeping everybody's experience positive one with the addition of the marketplace responsibility. I don't want it to get to the point where I have to tell buyers where they can call to submit a complaint. I want them to feel like there wasn't a complaint necessary because they were informed before they bid and or before they purchased. Thank you, and I love the podcast, love the chat. And as soon as I figure out how I stay on top of Pacific time and Central time, I'm in. I'll get to hear them all live. Thank you.
Okay, so good question in from seller Easter Bassett. I think to summarize Easter's concerns, a buyer went through checkout and was surprised to see the sales tax applied at checkout. Easter is wondering if we can do something to put the sales tax up front before, maybe on the listing page, before the buyer commits to purchase it.
The sneaky little sales tax at checkout
Uncle
issue.
Uncle Sam, coming for your money. Yeah, I don't think it is. You know, I don't think it is possible to show the sales tax amount on an auction format listing for sure. I know the sales tax is computed after the auction is over and then it's based on the final winning bid. So for auctions, it's especially complicated. And for buy it nows, you know, it is also tricky because it's based on the buyer's location. It would be easy if there was one sales tax rate for the whole of the US. We could display that up front. But depending on what zip code you're in, it's different for everybody. So I think it only can be applied at checkout once we know who the buyer is and when they're checking out. I see it very similar if I go into a retail store and I see a t-shirt for $20. I know that at the end, it's not going to be $20. There is going to be sales tax added on. So it's not a nice experience. It would be great if everything was displayed up front, but that's just not the way it goes in the US. And I haven't heard of any plans to change it or if it's even possible to do that. What about you?
And I think buyers are starting to get used to it. It's a new behavior. We're all starting online to get used to it. So maybe it's the first time that the buyer had seen it or had purchased from that state.
Yeah.
You know, the seller in that state.
Yeah, exactly. It's a relatively new thing on eBay. The marketplace tax did kind of start being rolled out in 2019. So yeah, maybe this is an older eBayer who hasn't been on in a while and is wondering why we're now charging. But legally, we've got to. So we've got to comply.
As you say, it is industry standard. So if you go across any retail sites online and also brick and mortar, it is something that turns up after you've actually worked out the purchase price.
Yeah.
And about to go into the transaction.
Yeah. One thing sellers could do maybe is put a note on their listing, you know, down the end of the description to say that sales tax may be applied to the final checkout price depending on the buyer's location.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, that might work.
Yeah.
Yeah. We know buyers read the description sometimes. So putting it up front. But the way it is, if they don't buy your thing and they go to another seller's listing, they're going to get also sales tax added there. So it's the same for all sellers across the board on eBay. So I wouldn't be too concerned about it. Buyers will see that it's across the board on eBay. And it is just a new behavior on eBay, I suppose, that they're getting used to.
And it's a state law, state laws that eBay's been fighting against for a long time. But it is, as you say, something that is new. Out of our hands. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And the caller mentioned that they are a fan of the podcast and they're wondering if the podcasts are live. So I can confirm that they're not live. They are pre-recorded and they do release every Tuesday morning at around 8 a.m. Pacific time, 5 a.m. on the East Coast. So if you are enjoying the show, you want to subscribe, you want to listen to it every week, you can do that through all of your favorite podcast apps. If you're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, you can subscribe and that way they will be automatically downloaded to your phone every Tuesday when the episode releases, so you don't even have to do anything. It just shows up on your phone. Or if you want to listen to it on desktop, I recommend going to ebay.com/podcast and you can listen to the podcast on the eBay community platform.
And I think that's what I love the most about podcasts is that you can listen to it when you're ready. You don't have to listen to it live.
Yeah.
And when we were thinking about the podcast, we always imagine sellers driving to their post office or to FedEx to drop off their shipments and listening to the podcast in the background.
Yep.
We want to talk to you where it suits you most. We don't want to, you know, ask you to speak to us when we're ready.
Yeah.
You know, we need to fit into your lives. So that's why I think the podcast is a really, really interesting and cool format.
Exactly. Totally agree. All right. So let's listen into our phone lines again for question number two.
This is user ID Ellie Mead Paul. My story is American Style for You. And I have a question regarding offers. I just wanted to see if there's a better way to negotiate with buyers that are interested in an item. I have received offers from potential buyers or counter offers, but instead of them doing it with a kind of like a fixed user interface on the platform, they actually send me an offer, a question of an offer through the messaging feature of eBay. And when I've sent offers, there's a lot of things that I can't change, so I can't really accommodate their request. One example is I submitted an offer to potential buyers, and one of them responded that they would be interested, but that they wanted the shipping cost to go down. So yes, I am working on revising my listings to get offered more free shipping, but in this case, that was not possible. And after the fact, I couldn't change my shipping option. So I'm just wondering if there's any plans for eBay to allow us to update shipping as part of the offer. I've had that request come in a few times, either, you know, offer a different shipping option or offer the buyer free shipping after the listing originally contained shipping paid by the buyer. I hope that makes sense. Again, Ellie Mead Paul, and thank you so much. Bye.
Okay, so Ellie Mead Paul, thank you for that question regarding best offer and how to engage with buyers when they send them through to you. So my understanding of the best offer feature was that it was extended to eBay messages quite some time ago. I think it was a year, maybe 2 years back. So now buyers can send sellers offers via eBay messages, and the offer process is the same. And it is possible to change shipping options for a live fixed price listing, but we do not always encourage buyers and sellers to negotiate a best offer on the shipping portion of an item's price.
A best offer is for negotiating on the item price alone, but that said, you can always add a free shipping option to a listing. But with a caution, because that would change the shipping options for the listing, not just for the buyer making the offer, so then any other buyer could also purchase the item with free shipping.
Ah, good point. Hadn't thought of that. So a seller and buyer, right, they can always communicate back and forth through eBay messages to nail down an offer price that is acceptable to both. Or the seller may need to know where the buyer is located prior to accepting an offer. So, for example, if the item has a fixed shipping cost and the buyer is located outside of the US, that's very important. And that factor could lead the seller into determining whether or not to accept a certain offer.
And to reiterate, a seller and buyer in a best offer situation should only negotiate on the price of the item, not the shipping cost. This makes it easier and clearer for both the buyer and the seller.
Yeah, and another feature I'd promote, the seller didn't mention it, but eBay did launch send offers to buyers about 6 months or so ago. So in your seller hub, when you're looking at your listings page, if you have listings that are eligible, so if you have people who are watching your listings but haven't actually purchased and the listing meets certain criteria, you can actually send offers to buyers and say, hey, I noticed you're watching my item. Would you like to buy it? And you can give them a discount. So it's just another tool we launched recently that helps sellers to get that sale over the line. And the last number I heard, I think it was in our previous podcast, we said that over 1 million offers were sent to buyers from sellers in the last year. So that's proving very popular. Sellers like it, and also our buyers like it, because who doesn't like a discount on an item that you're looking, but maybe it's just a little bit too expensive for you.
It's kind of fun too. There's something about the bartering.
Yeah. Exactly. It's like back to the old days of the street market, and you're trying to haggle down. It is fun, definitely, and it's kind of like, you know, the old days of eBay or still now when with auctions, everyone's trying to get the best price, the best deal, and you do that with auctions. Now eBay has moved more to fixed price, but true best offer, you still can then have that experience of surprise and delight and winning something for a cheaper price than you expected. And then the person gets it and they just have this nice warm fuzzy feeling about the item that they got for a bit cheaper.
The buyer's guilt that you get when you've done too much shopping online. You always feel a little bit better if you've paid less for it. You got a discount that you negotiated.
You can tell your spouse, well, I got a great deal. So don't worry about it. It was a good deal. You know, I didn't pay full price. So it's good. It's win-win for everyone. I would encourage you to check that out. We do have one more question that was sent in to us at our email address, podcast@ebay.com. And I'm going to read it out quickly. In your latest podcast, there was a question regarding international selling, which reminded me about my concern. I noticed since my store enrolled in eBay Managed Payments, I have no sales internationally. I mean zero. Prior to that, I had one or two sales every month from international buyers. I didn't use GSP before, and all my listings have shipping worldwide set up. I raised this concern on a Facebook group, and some sellers have the same issue. Could you please give an insight or your 2 cents? Many thanks. Liz, what do you think?
Well, managed payments will have zero impact on your international buyers because they are offered the same payment options as with PayPal. So they get Google Pay, Apple Pay, PayPal, all the same payment types that they're used to, plus more. So the way that they're paying as an international buyer shouldn't be impacting your sales.
No, if anything, they'll see more options. So there's a higher chance that they'll purchase from you. At least, you know, PayPal is there. And if they're familiar with PayPal, they can go with that if they like. But for sure, it shouldn't have a negative impact on your sales.
It's always natural to, like anything new that we try, we always want to, we want to say, well, that's had an impact. It's immediate impact. But we should also think about seasonality. So seasonality is not only in the US. Obviously, seasonality is internationally as well. So you need to take that into account.
For sure. Yeah. And the seller mentioned that they were only getting about 1 to 2 international sales per month anyway. So it's not a real significant number. If you're telling me you had 50 or 100 every month and suddenly that went to zero, I think I'd be more concerned then. But because it's 1 or 2, you could easily have a couple of months where it's zero and then all of a sudden you get 5. That's just the way the kind of trends that we see on eBay. So I wouldn't be too concerned with that. I would monitor it over time. And if next month goes by and you've still no sales and you're concerned, you can call into eBay customer support and they can check your account, check your listings, make sure that everything is okay. And then also through Seller Hub, you can look at your listings and your traffic that your listings are getting. So you can see their impressions, their views, compare it month over month. Is there a significant drop off this month? Okay, then maybe there's an issue somewhere. So it might be worth actually calling in and speaking to an eBay staff member over the phone. I would recommend that rather than Facebook groups, you're not going to get an eBay staff member in there able to assist you. So definitely give us a call. There's no harm. You might get a couple of insights that help you improve your listings. Okay, so that's all the time we have for this week and all the questions that we have. And I want to thank Liz for stopping by and filling in for Griff.
No worries. I'm going to go and buy him some white lilies.
That man loves his white lilies. Well, we'll have more questions to highlight in our next episode. And remember, we really love hearing your questions when you call into our phone line at 888-723-4630. But if you really cannot or prefer not to call in your questions, then email us at podcast@ebay.com. Podcast listeners, we need a favor. We've launched a survey and we need you to take it. It will help us learn more about our audience, which helps us to serve you better. You can share your opinions about the show so we know what you think is working and what we could do better. The URL is connect.ebay.com/SRV/A/sellerops.podcast. But don't worry, we'll include the URL in the podcast episode notes. Now go, take that survey. If you want to join the fun here on the eBay for Business podcast, call us at 888-723-4630.
That's 888-723-4630. And the best part, you can call that hotline any time of the day, any day of the week, and leave a question or a comment, and we might just put it on the air.
And if you're not a call-on-the-phone kind of person, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com. And if you're interested in finding a local eBay meetup shindig in your area, visit ebay.com/meetups. And if there isn't a meetup scheduled in your local metro area, well, you could consider moving, but probably less of a hassle. You can just start your own local eBay seller meetup. Don't forget, you can tune into the live video stream on our Facebook page every Wednesday at 12:30 Pacific. Go to facebook.com/ebayforbusiness. Right after the live stream, you can hop on over to the eBay community chat for a live community chat with eBay staff. Go to ebay.com/community chat every Wednesday from 1 p.m. Pacific.
That's it for this episode.
Roll the credits.
Head of Community, Brian Burke.
Special correspondent, Jen Deal.
My esteemed co-host, Alan Aisbitt.
And a big round of applause for our wonderful co-host this week, Liz Austin.
Woohoo!
Shout out to our editor-in-chief, Griff.
And the eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Lipson and Podcast 411.